Soundstripe.
Welcome to the Artificial Intelligence Podcast, where we dive deep into the wisdom and intelligence, or should we say, the artificial intelligence of Toronto's city government. In this podcast, we'll explore the latest happenings, decisions, and policies shaping our city, all through the lens of cutting-edge AI technology. Whether it's policy debates, urban development, or the key issues affecting daily life in Toronto, we're here to break it down and give you a fresh, insightful perspective. Stay tuned as we unpack the latest in city governance with a mix of smart analysis and sharp commentary.
Welcome back to Artificial Intelligence, Toronto City Council Edition.
Yes.
We're diving into part two of the November 14th, 2024 City Council meeting.
Okay.
Covering the evening session.
Right.
In our last deep dive, we explored the morning's events.
Mm-hmm.
But trust me, the evening session really ramps up the drama.
Oh, yeah.
With some surprising debates.
For sure.
And some close votes.
Definitely.
So let's jump right in.
Let's do it.
One of the first items on the agenda was the Culture Connects plan.
Okay.
A 10-year roadmap to boost Toronto's arts and culture scene.
Right.
But this wasn't just about feel-good initiatives.
No.
There was some serious debate about how to make this plan truly impactful.
Absolutely.
One of the key issues raised was the concept of cultural deserts, areas of the city where access to cultural experiences and resources is limited.
Right.
Councillor Myers, a major advocate for the Culture Connects plan,
yeah,
really stressed the need for greater equity in the distribution of resources. So how exactly are they measuring these cultural deserts?
Well,
is it just about the number of museums,
yeah,
or theaters in a particular neighborhood?
It's much more nuanced than that.
Okay.
They're looking at a whole range of factors.
Okay.
Like the distribution of arts, grants across different wards,
mm-hmm,
the availability of subsidized cultural events.
Okay.
And even the location of cultural infrastructure.
Okay.
Like rehearsal spaces and galleries.
So they're taking a holistic view.
Yes.
Considering not just the big institutions, but also the grassroots art scene.
Exactly.
It sounds like Councillor Chin, representing Willowdale.
Yes.
Really drove this point home,
mm-hmm,
with his comments about the challenges faced by the Willowdale Arts Collective.
Absolutely.
So he talked about how this group is doing amazing work creating community events.
Right.
But faces limitations due to the lack of dedicated spaces in North York.
Yes.
He saw the Culture Connects plan as an opportunity to address these gaps,
yeah,
and create a more vibrant cultural scene across the city.
For sure.
Now, beyond the social and artistic value,
mm-hmm,
was there any discussion about the economic impact of the arts?
Yes, there was.
It's easy to dismiss cultural initiatives as nice to have,
right,
but not essential.
Yeah, I know what you mean.
Councillor Kivel, who we heard from in the last episode,
yeah,
brought up some compelling data on this point.
He did.
He highlighted that arts and culture contribute significantly to Toronto's economy,
mm-hmm,
accounting for about 5% of the city's GDP.
Wow.
And providing nearly 150,000 jobs.
That's huge.
That's a pretty powerful argument for investing in the arts.
It is.
Wow. So it's not just about enriching lives.
I know.
It's also about economic growth.
Exactly.
It definitely changes the conversation.
It does.
And this leads us to a pretty radical idea that emerged during the debate.
Okay.
A proposal by Councillor Wong to pilot a program.
Okay.
Where the city would acquire at-risk commercial properties,
mm-hmm,
to create affordable artist hubs. Wait, so the city would essentially become the landlord for artist spaces?
Yeah, that was the idea.
That's a pretty bold move.
It is.
Was there much support for this idea?
It was definitely a controversial proposal.
I bet.
But Councillor Wong made a strong case,
okay,
pointing to the increasing challenges artists face,
mm-hmm,
due to rising costs,
right,
and limited affordable space.
Yeah. She sees this initiative as a way to provide long-term stability for the arts sector,
oh,
and prevent artists from being priced out of the city.
Makes sense.
That makes sense.
Yeah.
But I imagine there were concerns about the cost.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
And logistics of such a program.
There were definitely questions raised,
okay,
about how the city would select properties,
mm-hmm,
determine affordability, right, and manage these spaces effectively.
That's a lot.
It is.
But Councillor Wong emphasized that this would be a pilot program.
Okay.
Allowing them to test the concept.
Right.
And address any challenges before scaling up.
So a cautious approach.
Okay, so a cautious but innovative approach.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see how this develops.
Absolutely. This is one to watch for sure.
Now, shifting gears a bit.
Okay.
Let's talk about Toronto's role in the world of artificial intelligence.
All right.
We know the city already has a strong reputation in this field.
Mm-hmm.
But what concrete steps is the council taking to maintain that leadership?
Right. So Councillor Fletcher brought forward a motion to create a red table.
A red table.
Yes.
A group of stakeholders from academia,
okay,
industry, and government,
okay,
to develop a comprehensive AI strategy for Toronto.
So they're bringing all the big brains together.
Yeah, basically.
To figure out how to keep Toronto at the forefront of AI.
Exactly.
But what exactly will this red table be tasked with?
So they'll be responsible for identifying key opportunities.
Okay.
Addressing challenges.
Mm-hmm.
And creating a roadmap for sustainable growth in Toronto's AI sector.
Okay.
Councillor Fletcher emphasized the need for proactive planning.
Arguing that we can't afford to be complacent,
yeah,
in such a rapidly evolving field.
That's a great point.
It is.
It's not enough to rest on past successes.
Yeah.
You have to constantly adapt and innovate,
mm-hmm,
to stay ahead of the curve.
For sure.
Exactly. And this brings us to a topic that sparked a lot of debate.
Uh-oh.
Paid plasma donation.
Oh.
Oh, yes. This is where things get ethically complex.
It does.
Paid plasma donation is a hot button issue.
Yeah.
With strong arguments on both sides.
For sure.
Can you walk us through the key points of the debate?
Sure.
And how each councillor voted?
Absolutely. So this issue is particularly relevant because Canada is seeing the emergence of private companies offering payment for plasma donation.
Right.
A practice that's currently prohibited.
Right.
The council grappled with balancing the need for plasma, which is crucial for developing life-saving medications.
Right.
With concerns about potentially exploiting vulnerable people.
Okay.
Who might donate out of financial desperation.
That's a tough one. It's about weighing the potential benefits against the ethical risks.
Exactly.
So who are the key voices in this debate?
So Councillor Holliday, who ultimately opposed the motion,
argued
that if Canadian Blood Services doesn't have enough plasma supply within Canada, they will simply source it from other countries.
Okay.
His view was that allowing paid donation would at least give Canadian Blood Services more flexibility and keep the revenue within Canada.
So a pragmatic approach.
Yeah.
Focusing on the practicalities of supply and demand.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes. But several other councillors raised ethical concerns.
They did.
Arguing that paid donation could create a system where people are essentially selling their blood for profit.
Yeah.
Councillor Moyes, for example, likened it to a slippery slope.
Okay.
Towards commodifying essential healthcare resources.
I see.
That's a powerful image.
It is.
The idea of healthcare becoming marketplace,
where
the wealthy can buy their way to the front of the line. Exactly. And Councillor Perks added to this argument, expressing concerns about the specific companies involved in paid plasma donation.
Right.
Highlighting a need for greater transparency and ethical oversight.
Makes sense.
So a real clash of perspectives.
Yeah.
It sounds like there was no easy answer here.
There wasn't.
You're right. And the final vote reflected this complexity.
Mm-hmm.
While the motion to formally oppose paid plasma donation ultimately passed.
Okay.
Several councillors voiced strong reservations.
Yeah.
Even while acknowledging the ethical concerns.
It was a tough one.
So it seems like the debate is far from over.
Right. It's an ongoing conversation with no simple solutions.
Yeah.
But it definitely highlights the city council's willingness to engage with complex ethical issues, even those that extend beyond their direct jurisdiction.
Now let's move on to a topic that's sure to reshape the very look of Toronto.
Oh, okay.
The future of the city skyline.
All right.
The council voted to permit taller buildings along certain avenues, aiming to increase density and create more housing options.
Makes sense.
This decision sparked a lot of debate.
It did.
With some councillors championing the need for increased housing density, while others expressed concerns about the impact on neighborhood character and affordability.
I see.
So another example of balancing competing priorities.
Yes.
Where do we go from here?
Well, that's the key question. The council has directed staff to conduct a thorough review of existing avenue studies to see which ones need to be updated to reflect these new zoning rules.
Right.
This means we'll be seeing ongoing discussions
and
potential adjustments as the city navigates the complexities of building up
while
preserving neighborhood character.
Sounds like a recipe for some lively future council meetings.
Oh, for sure.
But before we get ahead of ourselves, let's rewind a bit.
Okay.
During the discussion on the Culture Connects plan, there was a rather tense exchange involving Councillor Perks and Councillor Perusa.
Okay.
Can you shed some light on what happened there?
Certainly Counselor Perks,
okay,
a strong advocate for the Culture Connects plan,
mm-hmm.
was emphasizing the importance of inclusivity and diversity in the arts.
Okay.
She mentioned her Christian faith,
okay,
as a personal source of strength and resilience.
Right.
Which sparked an immediate reaction from Counselor Peritza.
It sounds like he took issue with her bringing religion into the discussion.
That's right. Counselor Peritza interrupted her, expressing concern about the appropriateness of discussing religion in the council chamber, arguing that it could be divisive.
That's a sensitive issue for sure.
It is.
How did Counselor Perks respond?
Well, after regaining her composure,
okay,
Counselor Perks explained that she was particularly sensitive to accusations of bigotry.
Right.
Because she had been targeted in the past by Jim Kyriagiannis,
what?
A former counselor known for making controversial statements.
Oh, right. Kyriagiannis was ultimately removed from office for campaign finance violations.
That's right.
It sounds like Counselor Perks was drawing a parallel between his behavior and Counselor Peruse's reaction.
Yeah.
To her mentioning her faith.
Exactly. She was essentially saying that judging someone based on their religion,
right,
as Kyriagiannis had done to her, is a form of bigotry.
Yeah.
And that inclusivity means respecting different perspectives and beliefs.
It's a reminder that these council meetings are not just about policy debates.
No, they're not.
They're also about personal experiences,
mm-hmm,
and the complex dynamics that shape those discussions.
Absolutely. And speaking of unexpected turns.
Okay.
There was another interesting moment before the vote on paid plasma donation.
Okay.
Counselor Perks raised concerns about a particular lobbyist.
Okay.
Registered to speak on the issue.
What were her concerns?
She questioned his motives and past actions.
Okay.
Specifically referencing an incident,
okay,
where this same lobbyist had tried to get Beyonce banned from performing in Toronto.
What? Because he deemed her Super Bowl halftime show inappropriate.
Wow. Talk about bringing back some memories.
I know, right?
What was the council's reaction to this revelation?
It definitely caught people off guard.
I bet.
But it also underscored the importance of transparency and scrutiny,
okay,
when it comes to lobbying efforts.
Right.
Especially on issues with such significant ethical dimensions as paid plasma donation.
Okay, so we've covered a lot of ground here.
We have.
From cultural deserts and AI strategy.
Right.
To heated debates about religion building heights and paid plasma donation.
For sure.
Before we wrap up, let's go back to the council's decision to allow taller buildings along certain avenues.
Okay.
Can you give us some specific examples of the areas that might be affected by these zoning changes?
Absolutely. Counselor Fletcher,
mm-hmm,
who had championed the motion for the Red Table AI strategy,
right,
raised a question about the potential impact on St. Clair West.
Okay.
A neighborhood that already has an existing avenue study.
That might need to be revisited in light of the new zoning rules.
So those older studies might no longer reflect the current thinking on building heights.
Exactly. And Councillor Burnside, representing Ward 10,
okay,
expressed concerns about Huntingwood Drive,
yeah,
a street characterized by predominantly low-rise buildings.
Right.
He questioned whether Huntingwood Drive would even be considered an avenue under this new framework,
okay,
and worried about the potential for a sudden shift in scale,
right,
that could clash with the existing neighborhood character.
It's interesting how these zoning changes,
yeah,
which might seem technical on the surface,
yeah,
can have such a tangible impact on the look and feel of different parts of the city.
You're absolutely right. And this is where the rubber meets the road, so to speak.
Right.
As these plans and policies are implemented, we need to pay attention to how they affect different neighborhoods and communities.
Now, there was another topic that sparked a heated debate.
Okay.
The council's decision to permit taller buildings along certain avenues, mm-hmm, aiming to increase density,
okay,
and create more housing options.
Right. This decision really exposed the tension between the need for more housing in,
yeah,
a rapidly growing city,
right,
and the desire to preserve the character of existing neighborhoods.
Right.
Councillor Holliday, who we've heard from on a few issues tonight, was particularly vocal in his opposition to these zoning changes.
What were his main concerns?
He argued that taller buildings could lead to a loss of sunlight for residents,
okay,
create a sense of being walled in,
yeah,
and disrupt the established aesthetic of certain areas.
Okay.
He specifically pointed to a proposed 22-story building on Rathburn Road near Highway 427,
okay,
an area that was previously zoned for much lower density development.
So a classic case of residents feeling like the rules are changing without adequate consideration for their communities.
Exactly. And it highlights the challenge of balancing competing interests when it comes to urban development.
Right.
How do you accommodate growth without sacrificing the qualities that make a neighborhood unique and desirable?
That's the million-dollar question, isn't it?
It is. And while the motion to update the zoning for these avenues ultimately passed,
okay,
the debate itself revealed the deep complexities
right.
and potential consequences of these decisions.
It sounds like this story is far from over.
You're right. As the city moves forward with implementing these new zoning rules,
right.
we can expect ongoing discussions
mm-hmm.
and perhaps even further adjustments as they navigate the delicate balance between density and neighborhood preservation.
Well, it certainly sounds like we'll have plenty to discuss in future episodes of Artificial Intelligence, Toronto City Council Edition.
Indeed, Toronto is a city in constant flux,
yeah.
and its council meetings provide a fascinating glimpse into the forces shaping its future.
Now, before we wrap up our deep dive into the November 14th City Council meeting,
okay.
there's one final topic I'd like to touch on.
Right.
The issue of paid plasma donation.
Yes. This was a particularly complex and ethically charged issue that generated a lot of discussion and debate.
Let's break it down for our listeners.
Okay.
Can you remind us why this topic was even on the council's agenda?
Certainly, Canada is seeing the rise of private companies okay. offering payment for plasma donation.
Okay.
A practice currently prohibited in the country.
So it's a relatively new development
yes.
that's raising ethical concerns.
Precisely. The council grappled with the question of whether to formally oppose paid plasma donation.
Right. Yeah.
Weighing the potential benefits against the ethical risks.
Okay, so let's unpack those arguments.
Okay.
What were the main points raised in favor of allowing paid donation?
Some councillors argued that allowing paid donation could boost domestic plasma supply.
Okay.
Reducing Canada's reliance on imports.
Mm-hmm.
Councillor Chin, for example, pointed out that even if the City of Toronto opposed paid donation,
okay.
it wouldn't necessarily prevent it from happening.
Right.
As the ultimate authority rests with the federal government.
So his perspective was that if it's going to happen anyway,
yeah.
why not try to at least keep the economic benefits within Canada?
That was his reasoning, but there were also strong counter arguments.
How?
Several councillors voiced concerns about the ethical implications of allowing companies to profit from people's blood.
Right.
Particularly those in vulnerable financial situations.
So the worry is that it could exploit people who might feel pressured to donate for money.
Yeah.
Rather than out of altruism.
Exactly. Councillor Moyes drew a parallel to the commodification of other essential healthcare resources.
Okay.
Arguing that allowing paid plasma donation would create a system where access to life-saving treatments
right.
could be determined by wealth rather than need.
It's a sobering thought. It seems like a classic dilemma of balancing practical considerations against ethical principles.
You've hit the nail on the head, and the council's decision ultimately reflected this complexity.
So how do they vote?
The motion to formally oppose paid plasma donation passed.
Okay.
But it was not a unanimous decision. Even some councillors who voted in favor expressed reservations,
right.
acknowledging the difficult trade-offs involved.
Okay, so it sounds like a victory for those who prioritize ethical considerations,
mm-hmm.
but with a recognition that there are no easy answers.
You've summed it up perfectly. It's a decision that highlights the City Council's willingness to engage with complex ethical questions.
Okay.
Even those that extend beyond their immediate jurisdiction.
Well, there you have it. A deep dive into the November 14th Toronto City Council meeting.
Yes.
From cultural deserts and AI strategy to skyscrapers and plasma profits.
Mm-hmm.
This meeting tackled a wide range of issues that will shape the future of our city.
It was certainly an eventful evening.
Yeah.
Packed with debates, decisions, and unexpected moments.
For sure.
That revealed the diverse perspectives and priorities at play in our city government.
And for you, the listener, this deep dive is just the beginning.
Yeah.
As these plans and policies unfold, pay attention to how they're implemented, who benefits, and what unintended consequences might arise.
Absolutely.
Well,
because ultimately, the future of Toronto is shaped not just by its elected officials, but by engaged citizens who hold them accountable.
Right.
And contribute to the ongoing conversation about what kind of city we want to live in.
So there you have it. A whirlwind tour of the November 14th City Council meeting. What stood out to you?
Right.
And what questions do you have about the future of our city? Thanks for listening. Make sure to subscribe and check out other podcasts from the Promptcast Network. It's fascinating how even seemingly local decisions,
yeah.
like zoning changes or taking a stance on paid plasma donation,
mm.
can connect to these bigger societal questions.
Yeah, absolutely. It's a reminder that city council meetings aren't just about dry policy discussions.
Right.
They're a microcosm of the larger societal debates happening around us,
right,
reflecting the values, priorities, and even the anxieties of our communities.
And for you, the listener, it's a chance to engage in these issues on a personal level.
Yeah.
Think about the topics we've covered in this deep dive.
Mm-hmm.
How do they affect you?
Right.
Your
Ooh.
Neighborhood,
yeah,
your vision for the future of Toronto.
That's the beauty of local politics.
Yeah.
It's close to home,
right,
tangible,
uh-huh,
and directly impacts our daily lives.
For sure.
The decisions made in that council chamber will shape the cultural landscape,
uh-huh,
the economic opportunities,
yeah,
and even the physical environment of our city.
So what stood out to you from this deep dive into the November 14th city council meeting?
Right.
What sparked your curiosity?
Yeah.
Your concern?
Mm-hmm.
Or even your inspiration?
As these plans and policies unfold,
yeah,
stay informed.
Okay.
Stay engaged.
Mm-hmm.
And let your voice be heard.
Right.
Because ultimately, the future of Toronto is a collaborative creation.
Yeah.
Shaped by the collective wisdom and actions of its citizens.
Thank you for listening. Make sure to subscribe and check out other podcasts from the Promptcast Network.